everybody, and welcome to another True Stories of Tinseltown. And I am still going to do these. I have some great, great guests coming up during our lovely pandemic, which is not funny. It's horrible. And but I have one of my favorite guests, and I'm so glad he's with me today, is John DeLeo, author, and boy, you know everything about movies. Hi, John. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Grace. It's good to be back with you.
I really enjoy you coming on, and I know people like listening to you because you know your stuff. And I have to say, if you're looking for a book to give you some really good information, you have to get his 10 movies at a time, because it goes from, you know, not only do you tell us history and the kind of movies that go there, and like I said, we talked so long, we didn't even get out of the 30s. How long, what do you go up to? Like the 60s?
It goes 1930 to 1970.
Wow.
Basically sort of the, you know, the peak, up to the peak of the studio system and its decline, getting up to the rating system in the late 60s.
Yeah, but this is a really good guide to have, and you guys will love it, because I really did, and I do when I have it with me, and it's a really good book. And he also wrote one that I enjoyed, and we did a show on, and that's your, 100 great performances that we...
100 great film performances you should remember but probably don't. So it's a lot of the great neglected performances by big stars. So
yeah, that was fun to talk about. And it's you made some really good choices. I like them a lot.
And that one goes from 1920 to 2000.
Wow. So,
I keep changing the barometers, the parameters, but keep finding ways to talk about this stuff.
Well, you're also writing a new one, right?
I am. I'm still not really talking about it. It's not really supposed to come out.
You don't have to talk about it. Just
no, but I'll just say it's supposed to come out in the fall of 2021.
Wowee.
And it's going to cover from 1935 to the present.
Wowee.
And I'll just tease you with that for now.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are writing books and they can't tell me the scoop about their new ones. So you're not alone. And as long as it's classic movie stuff, I'm thrilled. I love when people write stuff. Because, you know, like I was telling someone the other day who was on the show that, you know, I look at these biographies, I want to talk to them, and a lot of them were written like 35 years ago, and the people are like not on Earth anymore or something. Yeah. So when new ones come out, I am absolutely thrilled.
So, well, it's fun because the last thing I'll say on that is just that, you know, this will be my seventh one. And the kind of the challenge is to keep finding new ways into what is essentially the same terrain. And sort of like, what's a new spin on this? Like, what's a new way to enter it and then talk about things in a different way, coming from a different angle? And I think I hit on a good one. So,
yay.
Anyway.
Excellent. Because I really love your writing. And he knows a lot. John and I have picked five each movies that will help you, that we think are really good to take your mind off of all this horror. And John, would you like to start?
Sure, of course. In no particular order, I think when you asked me about this, the first movie I thought of was Singing in the Rain, which is really, you know, an hour and 45 minutes of making you feel good. Just about every moment of it is escapist and forget your troubles and hilariously funny and breathtakingly colorful. And, you know, I was thinking, too, about Gene Kelly talked about this particular movie and, of course, the title tune, Dance, and how there were so many numbers that were so much harder for him to execute. You know, the alter ego number in Covergirl, the animation dance in Anchors Away, and how what was basically the simplest one of them all, Singing in the Rain, is the one for which he's most remembered, the most beloved, and that essentially because it just goes to that childlike happy place of splashing around in puddles the way we all would like to do and at some point stop doing, and how that number from beginning to end, particularly at the end with the splashing, but is just that release of pure childlike joy. And in terms of a movie that makes you feel good in that particular scene, it really doesn't get any better than that.
No, and it's funny, like you said.
It's hilarious.
I love the woman. I love this actor.
Gene Hagen.
Gene Hagen is wonderful with that voice. I love it. It's just
well, you know, it's the rare musical that I mean, we would hate to, of course, take out all the musical numbers, but if you did, you'd still have one of the funniest movies ever made. And that's not true of a lot of musicals, where if you took out the musical numbers, you'd still want to watch it. But in this case, the script is so hilariously funny, so clever, that you might be able to get by.
Yeah. And the thing is, to think that was Debbie Reynolds' first film. How amazing.
Well, her first real chance, you know, at something, you know, essentially a leading lady part. Yeah. And the stuff that they put on her shoulders in that one was kind of daunting. Not even 20 years old. And to be opposite Kelly and being directed by him and being taught to dance by him and how she pulled it off so charmingly. What a triumph for her.
And she was always that way, though. Debbie was born a trooper, I think, because she was still entertaining, you know, pretty soon before she died. And she was amazing.
And I mean, not to get too far from the point, but, you know, and she really, when she had the chance, could be quite a good non-musical actress. I'm thinking of The Catered Affair, which she's outstanding.
I love that.
Also much, much later in Mother. But, you know, she didn't always get those good opportunities. But when she got them, she seized them.
And she was great and believable. Yeah. And you really
enjoyed.
Oh, did you ever see the one with her and Tony Curtis?
The Rat Race. That's another good example. She is very good in that.
I think that might be her best dramatic. Yeah.
That's an awfully good one. Yeah. That's a very good performance.
Yes. But John, can I tell you, before I got your list, I knew that this was going to be your first choice.
Well, it's just so obvious that, I mean, musicals make us happy, and it's probably the best. So what could make us happier than the best musical? So
exactly. Okay. So I'm going to go to one of my favorites, and it's Jean, my lovely Jean Harlow, in Bombshell. I believe that was 1933 or 34.
So, 33, you got it. Yeah.
And some say it was based on her life, but more so it was probably Clara Bow, where Clara Bow had all these people leeching off of her. And this movie is very funny. Jean is so young, and to have that humor down, to be so good at being just naturally funny, is amazing. And it has great co-stars, although I don't know how you feel about him, Lee Tracy.
Yeah. No, I not so much in this one, but there are a couple of, I love him in the Half Naked Truth. That's my favorite Lee Tracy movie, where, you know, he's really playing an operator. He really comes in, and I mean, he's pretty, you know, much of his usual schemer type in this one as well. He's not in it as much as some of those other ones, but generally I like him. I do.
I do too, but I think there's some people who go, I don't know. Maybe they don't. They've never seen the movie, but it's a good movie. And Franco Tone is hilarious in this. I love that one scene about his feet.
Yes. And, I'd love to run naked barefoot in your hair. Yes.
And later she's like, oh, he's Lee Tracy. He says, what if he's got athlete's feet? Whatever. Yeah, running your feet. Anyway, it's very funny. Frank
Morgan's great as her father. Yes. And Una Merkel is her, secretary, sidekick, you know, the wisecracking of
assistant. Yes.
But you know what's wonderful about that movie is that, you know, it gives you a real feeling for MGM in 1933. They call it something else, but essentially we're at MGM and they're on the lot. And they call her, even though she's not playing herself, they call her back to the set for retakes on Red Dust. And they talk about Clark. And so it's sort of half in and half out in terms of it really being her. And you feel like it's this sort of magical window into not just the movie itself, but the making of it. And it's so much fun feel like you're a fly on the wall.
And she's doing the barrel scene, you know, which is great.
Right.
They had to redo that
the barrel,
one
right.
over. And she, I thought, he doesn't usually play these kind of characters.
Oh, Pat O'Brien.
I thought he was really good. I liked him a lot in this. He didn't have a huge role, but he was, everybody was on the money. That little, the brother, I don't know who he is. And then she wants to adopt a baby and these matrons come in and everything is crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. And so he goes, what are you moles doing here? The brother, I mean, they're just funny. It's just, and she thinks she wants to get out of the movie business and you would just love it. Jean is at her best and they are all just such a joy to watch. It's a wonderful movie.
I actually included that one in 10 Movies at a Time in the chapter about great comedies of the early 30s, during the pre-Code era. And that it's just, you're right. It's just such a pleasure from beginning to end. I'm a Harlow fan as well. When she got the right kind of comedy material, she's just magical.
She really is. And also I loved her, she played kind of a comedy, but Red Dust, I loved her in that.
Oh, I love her. Me too.
It's like, I think that's my favorite movie of hers, but I love Bombshell as far as comedies go. And, I like it much better than others, but I have another one on the list but it's your turn.
Let's see. Well, I realized three of the five I picked are all depression movies, but, it makes sense because, that was such a period for Hollywood, taking very seriously its role of providing escapism to an unhappy audience in a lot of cases. And so for, not very much money, people could go and be taken to these other worlds. And as we've been talking already about, how do you make people feel good, feel happy when times aren't so good? And the depression, Hollywood found out they had this amazing skill at this particular job. And so the first one I'll bring up is Mr. Deeds Goes to Town from 1936. Now, of course, there has to be a Capra movie discussed on the show about movies that make you feel good, because that's kind of what he was known for. And even the audience knew the director's name, which was pretty rare then for the masses to be aware of who directed these things.
And who wrote it was Robert Riskin, who I talked to his daughter, Victoria.
Oh, yeah. Right. She had the book. Yeah.
She's great. It was a really good podcast. But he was amazing. And this was his favorite film that he wrote. And they had a dog named Mr. Deeds.
Well, also made, Gary Cooper, who was already a star for, almost a decade.
Yes, he did
Silence. A handsome leading man. Yeah. But this really proved his knack for comedy in a big way. And then he always occasionally would make other ones that would remind us, like obviously Ball of Fire, which he would tap into that sort of deadpan comic style that was so charming, so understated. And it's just irresistible of a regular guy who inherits a fortune. And after sort of being wined and dined by a lot of corrupt people in the city, all after his money, sort of gets a social conscience when he's sort of confronted by the depression when a starving man breaks into the mansion. And it, politicizes him, and he makes it his mission to do good and fight corruption. And it's so heartwarming. Capra was so good at that, about saying, the power of the little guy to change the world, to take on the bad guys and be victorious ultimately. And, of course, it's got the additional pleasures of Jean Arthur as a hard-boiled, cynical newspaper woman who, of course, falls in love with him. And she, too, has this incredible transformation over to the light side, leaving the dark side. And in both cases, they're both so enchanting, and they have great chemistry.
They have really good chemistry.
Yeah, you fall in love with them, and they're falling in love with each other. And it's a true feel-good movie, and I absolutely love it. I've screened it for groups, and they always go nuts for this movie. And I think, one more thing about Capra was, I think his touch could get a little heavy the more famous he got. And he still got it in sort of perfect tune at this point. I have some trouble with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and some of the ones after that, where I just feel like they can get a little heavy handed.
John Doe.
And to meet John Doe, yeah. But those earlier ones, Lady for a Day, It Happened One Night, this one, it just seems like he's so on top of it. The tone is just perfect. You know, it's got the social consciousness, but it's tempered with so much humor and romance and charm that you don't feel like you're being taught something.
Right. And it's, yeah, they try to have him declared insane, which is what it is. And he is so good. And a lot of people who worked with him always said, they looked at him and they're like, he stinks. But then they see it on screen and they, it just comes across so great. They think he's doing nothing. And
I remember Teresa Wright saying that in Pride of the Yankees. It was like, oh my God, he isn't doing anything. And then she's like, well, wait till they look at it. They're going to see how bad he is. And she looked at it, was like, oh my God, he just walked away with that scene from no one's going to look at me kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's so good. You have to have a lot of confidence to be able to do that, to know you can do so little and it says so much and believe it comes across on screen
because people that you're acting with don't get it until they see you on screen, which is amazing.
It is amazing.
I love him. Anyway, I have another one, but I'm going to go into this one, Pillow Talk. I love this movie. It's sweet. It's funny. It's Doris and Rock at their best, of course, with Tony Randall and Thelma Ritter. This is a wonderful movie. It is great, escapist fun. I love their little, you know, how she doesn't know, you know, that always is like, who cares? But it's a great film. It makes you feel good. They have the three of them have great chemistry, but Doris and Rock especially. And it makes me feel good when I watch this movie. And I have to say, this is one of my repeat movies that I will watch.
Yeah.
I don't really want to have to concentrate, but I want something that's nice on. So I'll put on Pillow Talk. That's one of my go-tos.
Well, you know, it's 1959. And you could say it's the official kickoff of the 1960s sex comedies, and yet none of the ones that came after it really come close to it. They're all sort of copies, including all the ones that Doris Day did, whether with Rock Hudson or not. I mean, some are better than others, but none of them are as good as this one.
No, this one is great.
I think it was certainly. You know, when I used to watch Sex and the City, I would always think of Pillow Talk because it seemed to me that Sex and the City for, you know, the late 90s was what Pillow Talk was in 1959. The fantasy of, particularly for women who was focused toward the fantasy of going to the big city, having a career, living alone, you know, while looking for a mate, having a fantasy job of interior decorating, having a fabulous wardrobe, and that there was this fantasy of a New York City life that whether you were going to try to have it or not, you could watch Doris Day do it. And then, you know, 40 years later, you could watch Sarah Jessica Parker do it. But again, they were setting up this feel-good fantasy of an urban, you know, a dream come true.
Yeah, and the whole thing was with that. She also had a maid who was Thelma Ritter. Not only she had a job, but she had a full-time maid, Thelma Ritter, who was fabulous. And she had men after her. And it was funny because Tony Randall I love, but you just can't see him as a viable, you know, kind of dreamboat for her. But he did. You heard the story how he suggested that they should switch roles, not in Pillow Talk, but another one, that he should get Doris and Rock should be the sidekick. I don't know if that's a true story or not.
I've never heard that one, but I can't imagine that conversation got very far.
Actually, Rock and Doris laughed behind his back. It's just funny. And it's just ironic in some ways, too. But he was like the epitome of the bachelor, and she seemed like the hard butted chick and she was his challenge. If he could win and woo her, then he was the ladies' man of ladies' men. And then she designs his apartment. It's great. It's just such a fun movie and light, and you don't have to think one second about anything. You just have to watch them, and they're great. And enjoy it, kick back for almost 2 hours, and sing Pillow Talk.
Yes. back to me?
Yes.
Back to me. I will stay in the Depression. I'll actually stay in 1936 even. And I guess I thought it would be good to have one, you know, all-out screwball comedy, since the 30s and the Depression were so defined by the subgenre. And one of the best and one of the happiest making of them all was My Man Godfrey with William Powell and Carol Lombard, who had once been married and were now divorced, but clearly still good enough friends to play opposite each other
and fall in love on screen.
Yeah,
they maintained a friendship their whole lives.
Yeah. And this gets at another a way that I think a lot of the Depression comedies made the masses feel good was usually the regular people were smarter than the rich people. It Happened One Night does that too, where you find out rich people don't really know how to do anything, and that you got the you know, the wacky heiresses, often played by Carol Lombard, who had everything but were sort of goofballs.
Right.
But regular folks like Clark Gable in It Happened One Night know how to do stuff. They know how to dunk a donut and coffee. They know how to undress. And Claudette Colbert doesn't know anything about anything. But the magic of My Man Godfrey, of course, is the star duo, and particularly Carol Lombard, in the sense that she's playing this total whack job, rich and zany and childlike, and it's irresistible, of course, when she falls for the butler who has a secret. He has a secret, of course.
They find him because these rich people are so bored. They do these and they were saying it's for charity, but there's never any money to go to charity because they're having to be a party. But they were doing a scavenger hunt, and on the list was a forgotten man. So they went to the, I don't know, ash pile that was on the east side, something.
Like the city dump,
The city dump, and they found our lovely Godfrey. And he was just great, you know, and then they bring him in, and he gets up there, and he tells them all off. And he leaves, and he's wonderful. But throughout it, you know, with his secret and everything, he's just the calming influence. He's Cornelia, the bratty sister, even has her comeuppance. The crazy mother, her protege,
Yeah, only the father is on to them all, and sort of aware of how insane his life is with all these, you know, madcap nut jobs, fools. And sort of like Mr. Deeds, Godfrey does use all the things that come to him during this film to do something really good to help people. And so it's inspiring. Again, the old guys at the dump at the beginning, and you know, I'm trying not to give away the whole movie, but I'm saying it's inspiring for those suffering from the depression within the movie in terms of a happy ending.
Yes,
and sort of Carol Lombard not being zany by the end, but growing up. She certainly grows up, and It's just totally enchanting and very, very funny. And just to show how funny it was then, when they remade it in the 50s with June Allison, there was not a laugh in it. I mean, it's a terrible movie.
I've never seen it. And also,
terrible.
It was that David Niven, right? He played
Godfrey. David Niven. He was better. He fared better than she did. But it just goes to show another thing. It was very difficult to remake those feel-good comedies of the Depression because they were so attuned to the moment. And to sort of make it 20 years later and update it, you feel like, why are we watching this? What is going on? It has no point. And these escapist movies of the 30s have a very clear point. And even if we're long past that particular moment, you could still feel the impulse and all of the joy that radiates from what they were trying to do then. It never went away.
No, and certainly we need that now. And it just, you know, like, it just, I don't know why they do remakes in half these films. It's like so absurd.
Recognizable title. They think they're halfway there. Oh, they loved it in 36. Just, you know,
June give Allison.
Give it Technicolor and we're halfway there or June, three quarters. Of the.
She no. ain't no Carol Lombard, June Allison. Let's put it that way.
Mm-mm.
She just isn't. And no offense, Junie, but that's the truth. I chose, since we've been talking about comedies and musicals and stuff, I chose a love story, Random Harvest. And I wrote about this on my page. Not a lot, but it's such a wonderful, beautiful love story set in World War I. And then it just goes over time and time and time. And it's sad. It makes you cry. But it makes you happy. And it makes you sad. Then it makes you overwhelmed and happy, but you cry. And the reason I chose Random Harvest, and this is a spoiler because this is going to be it, because in this love story, there are beautiful love stories, Waterloo Bridge, other things like that. But this one actually has a happy ending, which that's why I chose it. And it's a beautiful story. Greer Garson, this is my favorite film she did. She and Ronald Colman were wonderful together. And I just thought they were great. Susan Peters, poor woman, what a horrible, tragic thing that happened to her. And she played Kitty. And you know what? Did she get nominated for Best Supporting Actress?
She did. Yeah. That's nice.
It was nice. But wow, just... That's another story for another show, guys. So it's just a really nice, beautiful movie. And parts of it will frustrate you, too.
I'm glad you picked it because I think it's a great choice for escapism and, like I said, getting lost in a world. Because I know this is going to sound like a dig, but the wonderful thing about Random Harvest is that the plot – if you just told everyone the whole plot is so absurd that you know, it's so otherworldly that you can't help but just succumb to this land that can't possibly be Earth because of all the crazy things that happen. And yet you're so swept away by, except the charm of the two stars, you get caught up in, you know, post-World War I, amnesia, falling in love, getting lost, you know, parting, reuniting. It goes on, and you don't really believe any of it could ever possibly happen to anyone. And that's part of the beauty of it, is that you can get lost in something so far removed from life as we know it. And what's more escapist than that?
But you know what? When you're watching it,
yes,
I believe it. You know what I mean? I believe it could happen because I'm watching this and I buy it. And of course it is. I just love it. It's just.
You do get caught up in it.
Right.
And that's the sort of mastery of the people involved is being able to put it over and put it over so well.
Yes. Was it a hit? It must have been a hit, right?
Oh, it was a massive hit. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. A massive hit for all of them.
Yeah. And they deserved it. It's just a beautiful film. Hang in there. It can get tough sometimes, but hang in. And it's always interesting. And if it didn't have Ronald Colman and Greer Garson, I can't imagine. So thank goodness they never did try to remake that, right?
Yeah, no. But and I think particularly, I mean, I love him, but she's got, I think, more to handle in sort of putting it over because I don't know who else could have, like I said, who has that capacity for escapism than Greer Garson, who really makes you believe anything is possible, even in Mrs. Miniver, in a different way, that she can handle all this with grace, with charm. No matter what comes her way, she's your gal. And look beautiful while it's happening, you know.
Of course. Always beautiful. Always beautiful. And this movie, at the end, I still cry my eyes out at the end. And it's just little actions by Ronald Coleman, just his act, the ending and his reaction to her. Yeah. I just go, gives me chills. It's a really good love story. Like I said, hang in there, and it has a happy ending, which is why I chose it.
And we're, you know, talking escapism, and I've been talking about the Depression, but this is, Random Harvest is a good example of World War II escapism.
Right.
It was released at the height of World War II, and it's got a teeny bit of war because it begins with the end of the First World War. But after that, then you're just out of any thoughts of wartime. And I think, what a great 2 hours to get away from it all if you had someone serving overseas. I mean, Random Harvest would really put you out of any of that for the whole solid 2 hours. So good on it.
Yes, and it worked. And I think it'll work with you guys. If you've never seen it, you're in for a treat. It's kind of like he said, it's a little, whatever, it may be unbelievable, but so are so many movies, let's face it. That's why they're movies. That's why we like to go to them. That's why we escape. That's it.
Well, I think I have a good segue because it's another World War I-based love story, and that's The African Queen, which may be my all-time favorite movie for feel-good escapism, particularly because of the, you know, it starts in such a non-feel-good escapist place.
Really horrible, yeah.
I mean, it's the start of World War I. We're in the middle of Africa, and, you know, Bogart's essentially a grizzled, drunken, you know, boat operator in the middle of nowhere, and Katharine Hepburn is a missionary leading a very lonely, kind of sad life, assisting her brother, who will soon die. And so it starts off in this sort of not such a great place. But when Bogart and Katharine Hepburn get together, you've got these two middle-aged, sort of ugly duckling types who are going to fall in love on this incredible adventure, find out they are so much more than they ever thought they could possibly be. And she will find she can feel beautiful. He finds he can feel heroic, and they become this incredible equal team at trying to fight a German ship, ultimately, but just initially just to survive this incredible journey on the river. And like I said, to watch their transitions, their transformation, both individually and as a couple, is one of the most satisfying experiences I think I've ever had in a movie.
They do amazing jobs. I have to give them credit with that. And they actually shot it in Africa. Yeah. And Catherine, Bogey and Houston didn't get sick because they wouldn't come near them, the mosquitoes. They had so much alcohol in their system. But Catherine would. But, you know, she was, of course, she's a missionary. And she's an uptight spinster kind of chick. And, you know, he's sort of like, doesn't shave, grizzled, grunt, you know, whatever. Yeah. And how she, you know, is judging him and whatever and doing everything. Yeah. And then they just, and him thinking she's just, ugh. And growing together and changing. It is a beautiful story. And
you do believe they fall in love.
I really do.
You
really
watch
do.
It, and then by the end, every move they make, it's just so beautiful. I think I've said it in somewhere else. I know I did in another book. You know, what starts out as this terrifying adventure is kind of a honeymoon, where they're not married yet, but this sort of sea cruise that they take, despite all of the dangers, is this incredible honeymoon of love.
Yes.
And they can look back on it that way, even if it doesn't feel that way while they're experiencing it. But it's this magical thing that happens, triggered by disaster and tragedy and war.
And it makes you feel good. Because like you said, you do believe them. They would never put Bogey in a movie with Katharine Hepburn. She would be too old.
In the real world?
Right? No, but in something like this, yes. And you can believe that they fell in love. I love the whole story. And they are convincing. They are just a really good couple and a good team. And it's a life changer for both of them. And How nice is that? You know, you just, you think everything stinks. Then you go on a boat with a captain who probably does stink. And Catherine can't exactly smell like roses herself. And, you know, you become madly in love, the hell with it. So you don't smell it anymore. And you fall in love. And through all the bad, you can still do that. It's still possible. It's still possible. And it's a very nice love story. It's a good one. Good escapist stuff. And I think everything we've chosen so far has been good escapist stuff.
Of course.
We did pretty good, I think.
I think so, too.
Okay, so where are we here? We are on My Libeled Lady, which I love this comedy. I think it's hysterical.
Too.
William Powell is his fishing scene alone.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's actually doing that. It's funny. So if you're watching his fishing scene, realize that William is doing all these flips and flops. He's just wonderful. The whole cast, Spencer Tracy, Jean Harlow is fabulous, Myrna Loy, the four of them, and they became really great friends making that movie. She and Powell were already, you know, sort of engaged. She was wearing that ring he got her that was like a pre-engagement ring. And she, at first, she wanted to play Connie Allenby, the rich woman. And they said, no, you're better off as that. And of course she was. She was perfect. She was perfect.
She was.
And he was wonderful because he was like a scheming conniver, womanizer. And he went into meeting Myrna Loy to get something for a lot of money for himself. So he went in as a duplicitous character who happens to end up falling in love with Myrna. And he sees that she's really a human being, not just a stuck-up creep that he thought she was.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I always loved about this one is that, again, not to give anything away, but when she does find out who he really is, they're already deeply in love. And you're expecting her, of course, to become furious and them not to talk and then having to win her back. But she doesn't behave that way at all. It kind of rolls off her back because they're already in love. And I always loved that about it.
I did too.
Thank you. Thank you for not putting us through all that nonsense for no reason, because we know they're going to get each other anyway. And I just love that. It's just she gets it. Whatever. We're past it. I love you.
I know you're a good man.
About it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And Spencer Tracy is enraged. He just wants it to happen. Yeah. And Jean Harlow, you know, he plays her too. He plays her because she marries him. She marries William Powell to get press and to ruin Connie Allenby, Myrna. And she ends up falling for him. And he kind of, whenever things come close or whatever, he comes by and kind of schmoozer. And she relents from doing, she does what he wants her to do. And when she finds out he's in love with Connie, she ain't too happy. But it's a wonderful, wonderful film. Happy ending, and it's just fun all the way through. It's really,
and they were Myrna Loy and William Powell were already Nick and Nora Charles at this point, and this is, I think, definitely the best of their non-Thin Man movies.
It is.
It might even be my favorite of all their movies, but and that foursome, as you said, I mean, that's just rare to have that much star voltage in one picture. You know, it was remade 10 years later as Easy to Wed.
Wasn't that?
It's not bad.
The Water Lady.
It's not great.
Esther Williams.
Yes, Esther Williams and Van Johnson. Right. But the good thing is Lucille Ball has the Jean Harlow role, and she's very, very funny. It's a real sort of hint at what's to come for Lucy in terms of slapstick. And, you know, so it was a really good showcase for her. The rest of it can't compete with the older one, but at least it's not a terrible remake like so many of them. So, see it for Lucy. The other one you can see for all four of them.
And I love it. I love how they all just became pals. They said William Powell would always go after his scene go into his dressing room. At this time, he did not go to his dressing room. They all hung out there, all had a great time. And I think it shows, you know, I know a lot of people hate each other and they can put stuff across on screen that they love each other. But this just comes across as such a, just they work so beautifully together. It's just, it's a pleasure, and you guys will love it. I love that little, those horrible people on the cruise ship. The mother and her daughter, the annoying people. It's just fun, and it love. Oh, who did she love? Who played her father? I love him.
Oh, it was Connelly. Walter Connelly. Yeah, yes, yeah. He was everybody's father.
Yeah, and he was always so well. He was Claudette Colbert's father. He was Carol Lombard's father. But she loved him, Marner, and she. You know, he he was also in 20th Century, and he was great in that as well. And he died very early. Of a heart attack. And he was just, he was really, I liked him a lot in the movies. I enjoyed him.
Yeah, me too.
Did you ever see Bitter Tea of General Yen?
Sure, sure.
He was great in that.
Yeah. That's a good Capra movie too, you know, of a different sort. Yeah.
I love that movie. If you guys can catch that one, I don't think, I remember when TCM finally played it and I was so excited. Because I had heard so much about it, and it hadn't been played. And I loved it. I know in those days they had to do the Asian. They didn't use Asian people. They have Asian people in it.
Just not in the good parts.
Right. Yeah. The lead role, when General Yen went to Nils Astor.
Yeah, Nils Astor, yes.
He
Scandinavian.
Was fabulous. You end up falling in love with him. I did. I could see where Barbara was attracted to him. He was so wonderful and smart and elegant. I just loved him, even though
that's the movie that opened Radio City Music Hall. It was the premier attraction, and it was not a hit, so it was not a good start for Radio City Music Hall.
But you know why? I think it was because of, like, oh, my God, they couldn't have her really be in love with him. And that was, like, so, you know, the times have changed, thank God. But, I mean, at that point.
It's visually quite a gorgeous movie. The black and white is quite stunning in that one. Yeah.
And that's not easy to do with black and white. And that is absolutely beautiful. Anyway, we went off topic. You give us your other film.
The last one for me, I started with Gene Kelly. I'll finish with Fred Astaire and with Ginger Rogers, and we're back in the Depression. But I can't not have Top Hat from 1935 on this list because, like Gene Kelly in The Puddles, I mean, what can make audiences happier than the perfection of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dancing together? And Top Hat is by far my favorite of their 10 movies, which similar to Singing in the Rain, the actual comedy is actually pretty good in this one. It's not one of those tedious plots.
No, it has a good one.
It's pretty funny all the way through, and so that's a big selling point. But it's the one with Cheek to Cheek, which is one of the most magical things they ever did.
And their dance number, yes.
The dance with
amazing.
The feathers.
Oh, he got so frustrated with the feathers. Yeah. He got
and
really mad.
I mean, this fantasy of an Art Deco Venice that doesn't look anything like a real place. they're not even outside. It's obviously a soundstage. But it's a dream of an Art Deco black and white Venice. And then this dance sequence, particularly Cheek to Cheek, it's just so soaring and transporting. And I mean, all the numbers are great, but that's sort of like the climax of man woman dance partnering in the history of movies. It's just we're talking about escapism, getting lost in feel good feelings, and like I said, Fred Astaire, and particularly with Ginger Rogers, it's not that hard for him to accomplish it. Yeah,
I don't think Ginger got – she was not, you know, a trained dancer to do just dancing. I mean, she was an actress. She could do drama. I thought she was a great comedian. I thought she could do everything. And I think she's underrated. Ginger should be better up there. And she is. She's appreciated by a lot of people. But she was really great. And of all his partners, Ginger rules for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's so many that I love. And I love the numbers he did with those women, you know, obviously Sid Charisse and Rita Hayworth and all. But there's just something that happens when it's Fred with Ginger. Now, part of it was at least they were closer in age. So there is more of a romantic component that he wasn't able to hold on to as the years went on with some of the younger partners. So there is a kind of sexual component that is still there, as subtle and, you know, tasteful as it is. There is a charge between them that is erotic. And it's still very potent all these years later. But there is, she did keep up with him. I mean, you're never thinking, oh, she's not good enough to be in this number, ever.
Never, no. Yeah. Nor was she ever. Well, I know she and Katharine Hepburn had a big feud.
Yeah.
And Katharine was a snot. A lot of people said that she was snobby and, you know, they.
Well, it certainly worked. Whatever was going on, it was perfect for stage door.
Oh, my God, it was fabulous.
That's what's happening in the movie.
So. I think that's when she spilled her coffee or something over Ginger's mink coat. Not nice.
Well, it was all to the good for stage door, but
well,
yeah.
They were good in that because they were such opposite types. But I think Katharine kind of looked down her nose at Ginger, but Ginger could dance. Ginger could do drama. Ginger could do comedy. Yeah. And, you know, I think she deserved a lot more props than Katharine gave her. And it is a wonderful movie. I love them dancing, and I love that song, and I still dance by myself to that song, I'm in Heaven. Yeah. I still do, and it's fun. So maybe you'll dance along if you watch that too.
Sure.
No feathers, but
no feathers ideas. Optional.
Right? Yeah. And no partner. Maybe I'll pick my cat up and we can try it. He loves my singing. God bless him. Anyway, that is a really good choice. This one, I don't know if you know this movie, and I know it's childish. And I know, you know, it's not one of the best movies in the world. But why I chose The Coming movie is because generationally, I know for a fact, because my ex-husband and I used to get a place in the Berkshires, Massachusetts, and that's where my family's from. And they would come, his mom and dad would come too, and his daughter, you know, on weekends, special weekends for a week. And this was always on the schedule. The Ghost and Mr. Chicken with Don Knotts. And it is silly. It is kids. The kids were laughing. From my nephews from, you know, like 5 to my mom, 80 to everybody just laughing because it's so stupid and funny. And Don Knotts is just such a funny, but everybody's funny in that. Ellen Corby, as his teacher, comes in and tells the guy that he has dirty fingernails. And then they have the psychic society of women who, it's just, to me, a fun movie. And if you're home with your kids, you know, this is a great movie to watch. You know, if you're just like, oh my God, what are we going to do? I can't hear this anymore. I can't. Check it out because it is funny. And if you have little kids, they will love it. I still laugh. I especially laughed when my mother laughed and when the kids laughed and everybody, you know what I mean? Because it just, you know, and it brought great memories for me.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, maybe you can make memories with your kids during this tough time. Just, it's silly. It's, like I said, stars Don Knotts and has recognizable people from all over. It has Clara from Mayberry RFD or Andy Griffith and Rita Shaw and all these great character actors and actresses that are out there. And it's, you know, Joan Staley plays a hot babe who he has a hots for. And it's just, I don't know. I guess because it brings just such fond memories for me that I thought, for people with kids, check this one out. And I think it's on YouTube.
Oh, I think we all have those films that we remember, like the whole family sitting around the TV.
And everybody laughing if it's a funny
movie. Yeah, and so, and then sometimes, as you say, it became a ritual, and then it takes on even more potency as the years go by. I'm sure I saw that one at the time because I would have I would have been like 5 when it came out. So that was sort of like the right age. And the one, actually, the one of his I remember better from that time was The Incredible Mr. Limpet.
I love that. Ladyfish.
Yeah, it goes to animation underwater. That one I remember watching on TV all the time. I don't really have a good memory. I don't mean I have a bad memory. I mean, I don't have any memory of The Ghost of Mr. Chicken.
But try
it. Yeah.
Try it. I think if you have kids, honestly, it's a generational thing. Sure. My nephews still talk about it. I bought them the Don Knotts series. They loved it.
Well, and he's wonderful. Yeah, yes. He's a wonderful comic actor.
So they just, they loved him. And I would, you know, I got them into Robin Hood. I got them, and they were little kids, you know. I got them into a lot of classic movies that they loved. And like I said, to hear my mother laugh so hard and snort and the kids laugh and other people laugh. It just, I think for, if you have children, this is a good one. And also The Incredible Mr. Limpet is a riot. And there's a romance, and Don Knotts still wears his glasses underwater as a fish. It's very good. Carol Cook, it's a good movie. And, it's not like John doesn't even know the movie, but it's good. Take my word for it and check it out. It might be on YouTube. I know it comes and goes at times, but, I don't think it comes on anything else. I don't think it's ever been on TCM.
I don't think so.
Oh, well, maybe it's just an obscure little movie, but
No, it's good. We should have one that
is for the kids,
and the surprise choice.
That is the surprise choice. Although I was torn between Teenager from Outer Space and this one. Everybody watch that one. He's the James Dean teenager from outer space. He's having angst and daddy issues. It's a riot. So if you can catch it on YouTube, too. Did you ever see that one?
No, I've never seen that one, but that is tempting.
Yes, the James Dean from outer space. It's a riot. And it's so cheap, and it's just funny. So if it's on YouTube. I mean, you can find some real treasures there if you look.
It's true. It's true.
But then they find out, and then they take them off, those poops. Oh, well. Anyway, I think we did good.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yes. And guess what? We're under an hour. Because John's always like, we're not going to go over. Over an hour. And we
Before we run out of gas, that's
right,
all.
Yeah. No. But I don't run out of gas with you, John. Because I love doing this with you. Anyway, there's so many great stuff to watch and listen to. John had wonderful picks. I like my picks too. And I like Ghost of Mr. Chicken and Teenager from Outer Space. I like those too. And, you just can have totally silly movies as a choice as well. So, they're not classics. Take my word for it, but they're fun. And John, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was fun. Thanks for having me on again.
I love having you on. I told you I'm doing more of these because I ain't going nowhere. Right. And nobody's going anywhere. I'm having people wanting to do the show, getting in touch with me. So it's fun. And if you think of, I've told John before, if you think of anything you we could talk about or watch movies we should choose, let me know and we'll do it because it's fun.
Sounds good.
Okay. And don't forget John's books, 10 Movies at a Time, 100 Performances You Should Remember But Probably Don't, and you've got the other stuff. You've got the screensavers.
The Tennessee Williams and Company, and the quiz book, And You Thought You Knew Classic Movies. People seem to enjoy that one. That's good when you're trapped. Well, that's another good one when you're trapped in the house playing quizzes. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to do one on books to choose. I want to do that one on really good books that will take you into showbiz land and whatever. But that's what I'd like to do too. So something to think about.
Yep.
Okay, everybody, thank you for listening, and I want to thank my pal, John DeLeo, for being here. He is wonderful, and I love having you, honestly.
Thank you, Grace.
And please be safe, everybody, and it's not easy, but we got to get through this. We can get through this, and we will. So thanks, everybody. Take care. Bye.